Hey, thank you for tuning in, everybody, to this week's episode. Very excited that you wanted to take the time out of your week to be able to listen to this. Before I get started into our guest, I just want to thank our presenting sponsor, Optimum Nutrition Athletics. We all know that protein is the key to muscle recovery, and best-selling 100% gold standard whey protein provides 24 grams of protein that mixes easily using just a glass and spoon. Gold standard 100% whey is made in their state-of-the-art facility. It's banned substance tested by Informed Choice. And with Optimum Nutrition Athletics program, you can get different products such as their Pro Gainer, which is their mass gainer, protein snacks such as the crisp bars, wafers, cake bites, and almonds. And oh my goodness, those crisp bars, ooh, are they so good. The vanilla marshmallow one is magnificent. Recently just had the salted toffee one, I believe is the flavor. That one is wonderful too as well. Big, big fan. And after dominating the sports and nutrition industry for over 30 years, newly created Optimum Nutrition Athletics brings that same trust and quality that knows how to put convenient options for protein in the hands of athletes who desire to become bigger, stronger, and better at their sport. We're talking about the gold standard here, guys. And Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics, his information is down in the show notes. You can quickly email him where he'll get back to you and being able to get the products and get you what you need for your athletes and for your facility. Highly suggest you reach out to him. These are absolutely wonderful products, guys. This is the gold standard. We've all been using it. It's an awesome product, awesome company. And Dave is a wonderful person. I can't thank him enough. And for Optimum Nutrition Athletics for being the sponsor of the podcast. So, guys, make sure you reach out down there. Again, they have easy protein snacks to get into your athletes. I know how tough that can be sometimes. We don't know what's going on outside of the weight room. But, hey, you know that you can get good quality protein to them inside of the weight room with those different options that they have with the crisp wafers and cake bites with Optimum Nutrition Athletics. So again, thank you, Dave Harvey and Optimum Nutrition Athletics, for being our sponsor. And this week's guest is Corey Redman of Layman High School down in Texas. He is the head powerlifting coach for the Layman High School powerlifting team. Coach Redman is an absolutely wonderful guest. This is an awesome episode, guys. He dives into this past season where they won the state championship in their division for the powerlifting. It's absolutely wonderful. Really, really enjoyed this episode. Make sure you reach out to Coach Redman on the internet, whether it's Twitter, Instagram. He gives his information down here in this episode, guys. Really thankful to have him on. I learned a ton from this episode, and I hope you really enjoy it as well. If you do enjoy it, make sure you give it that 5 stars on Apple Podcast. Maybe you listen to it on Spotify, Google, whatever it is. Share it with other people. Helps us out, guys, and we're also going to be on YouTube as well, so make sure you subscribe over there. Thank you to all of our guests. Thank you to our past guests. Thank you to Coach Redman. Thank you to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics. And everybody, stay strong. Two, one. What's up, guys? Straight Talking Shop podcast. I'm so excited to have on this week's guest. He was somebody that quite a few of you have reached out to me to have on. So we're very thankful to have him on here. Corey Redman of Layman High School. How are you, Coach?
Good. Thank you for having me on, man. I really appreciate it. I'm excited. Yeah, thankful
to have you on. And if you are watching via YouTube or however you watch this, which is probably going to be the only way it's YouTube, if you look in the background, there's some trophies behind you, Coach. I think something recently, maybe something happened with the powerlifting team you work with.
Yeah, so we kind of made history this year for Texas powerlifting, which anybody who's listening outside of Texas, powerlifting is pretty big here. I think we'll get talking to that a little bit later, but first time ever in Division One, which is 5A and 6A, that boys and girls team from the same school won state. So just to go over kind of our season recap, if that's all right with you. To qualify for regionals to begin with, you have to finish in the top 12 in your weight class, and that qualifies you for regionals. And then for state, you have to finish for boys this year with some COVID restrictions. You have to finish first or second at regionals. And there's 6 regions in the state of Texas. That's the only way boys go, is you're first or second. And girls, you're first or second in either 5A or 6A. And then there's a couple other qualifying standards that girls can make. But our region, we're region 2, which is all of Central Texas. All of Texas, there are 6 regions that are kind of evenly distributed. So they're pretty big for us. We are North San Antonio to essentially South Dallas. And then there's a freeway that runs through there called I-35. And on each side, we're about 75 miles east and west of that. So our specific region is about 250 miles north to south and about 150 miles east to west. So pretty big region. And this year we qualified 33 lifters for regionals, which there's about 70 schools per region. So you're talking about approximately, at least on the guy side, about 400 schools that are 5A, 6A powerlifting. We qualified 24 ladies, which was every single lady we had on the team. We had 24 ladies compete. All of them qualified for regionals. We had 9 guys qualify for regionals. Varsity team, to put it into perspective, there are 12 weight classes on the guys and ladies side. And so there are 12 spots that are considered varsity. 9 guys, our other 3 who were our varsity lifters, they were 13th, 14th, and 15th. So just barely out of it. We qualified, or we placed 21 at regionals, 17 ladies placed, 4 guys placed. And that gave us the regional championships for both guys and girls, which we've never done here. Our ladies broke our 2019 all-time regional record with 70 points, which a perfect score if you had one in every weight class, all 12 weight classes would be 84. So we were pretty close to that perfect score, definitely the highest ever. Again, we broke it by 17 points. From there, that qualified us 17 to state. 15 ladies qualified for state, 2 guys. We really qualified 2 more guys who got third and third at regionals who would have placed at state, who didn't even get the opportunity this year due to COVID restrictions on the guy side. I don't know why, but they're separate federations here. Out of that 17 that qualified, we had 14 state placers, 12 ladies who placed, and 2 guys who placed. And we actually had another lady who would have absolutely placed, except us as coaches, we messed up and bombed her out. Our fault, not her. She would have got second or third. From there, we had 8 state champions, 6 ladies, and 2 guys. So half of 5A state champions were won by us. We're the only team on the guy side to have 2 state champs. So we had 8 state champions, or one third of all the state champions were on our team. We had 2 best state lifters, both guys and girls. Lightweight state best state lifter were from us. So we won half the best state lifters. And then that brought us to 2 state champions, first state champions that our school has ever had, state championship teams ever. And first time in our district's history, or first time since 2014, that somebody in our district has won state. And we did it on a Saturday, and then the following Saturday, the guys did it. So it was a record-breaking year. I don't even know how many regional and state records we broke, but at least a few state records and probably 15-ish regional records. I didn't even look at that, but it was an amazing year. Their hard work paid off. It was awesome since they got it taken away last year with COVID.
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit before the podcast, before we got rolling, but personally myself, I would see almost every day, if not, 60% of the week, I would see your guys' videos up of your guys' training. So to now see the end result, it's truly amazing to see how you guys went from this spot to now all those records that were broken. It was absolutely amazing to see over that time period, because if we're talking about powerlifting, that is a it's grueling, man. It's very, very tough. And then for you to get them to that point is truly amazing, man.
I appreciate that. That's a testament to their hard work. I know everybody says, I have a special group of kids. All coaches say that, and that they work hard. But I've had a unique ability or a unique opportunity that I've worked with a lot of the other sports in our school, and I mean there's no disrespect to them, but my kids, they just really are a different breed, and I don't know if that's me or them or what, but they're awesome. I mean, the seniors, and so for example, the juniors and seniors, they've taken 1 week off in the last 3 years. The juniors have never taken a week off, the ones that just won. So they just show up. Girls after state, they took a week off that I made them take, and they're right back all in there trying to qualify for USAPL high school nationals here. They'll compete in 2 weeks, and then nationals is into next month. And our goal is to go in there. We have at least 6 ladies who will qualify and go in there and win it as well. So on the ladies side.
That's a true testament to consistency. That really is. And I know I've had like Josh Bonnetall on here before, and he's talked about it, like showing up, that is like the biggest battle. If you show up, like good things are going to happen. And I think maybe that's a great engine to have behind things. Like you just said, of like every week we're going to get in here, we're just going to get that much a little bit better. And it's going to carry us, very far, especially when you're looking at a whole season from the start to the beginning. How did you kind of set things up from your side as a coach, from, hey, we're going to be here week one to when we're going to, you know, hopefully state championship? How did you kind of set things up?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, the off-season training, it was never anything discussed. It was just an assumption I made. I was there and they showed up. Like, we didn't discuss it. It was just kind of an expectation. You know, they had a little bit of success before I became the coach here. So I'm really fortunate to be in that position that I wasn't kind of having to start over anything like that. And I just showed up. I did a little bit of things to change it the first year. And then it's just an expectation. If you want to be good, you know, I don't mean this like to sound egotistical or narcissistic, but I 100% believe if I were to stay here, which I'm probably leaving for my PhD next year, but I 100% believe my ladies would never lose state again as long as I was here. Ladies especially is just consistency. And that's what I try to tell them. You know, you show up day in and day out and you work hard, you do your recovery, you take your nutrition right, you sleep, you will be stronger than you can ever imagine. And then guys, you know, that's a little different. Testosterone leverages, you know, muscle structure, but ladies, it's all about just showing up. And then we have a couple freaks on the guys team too. We're really lucky to have that. But that's the hugest thing in this sport, or all sports really, is just consistently putting in the work and having that long-term vision that, hey, I might not be good this year, but I might be a state placer next year. And so kind of how my progression and their goals, and then I'll go into kind of how I structure the season. But my goals is that freshmen qualify for regionals. They go to state as a sophomore, they place as a state as a junior, and they win state as a senior. And that's my progression for all the kids. That's my expectation. My goal is that they increase their deadlift and bench 50 pounds each, and their bench that they improve 30 pounds a year. So my goal is that they're adding 150 pounds to their total. And then one of the kind of how we structure our season. So this year is a little different because they wanted to go and see what they could do in high school nationals. But normally we would be, so there's probably 15 are still in suits, and then the other 20 or whatever who are showing up right now are raw. And so we do 6 months. So from the time the season ends until the time school starts, we're totally raw, high volume. We do kind of just add some sets or add some reps, deload, add some weight, start over and do it again. And then we actually, and this is a thing that people are really shocked, the day that school starts, so we're talking whatever, August, my kids are in suits. So they're in suits for 6 months. The learning the suits, the learning how to use the leverages right on suits are definitely different than raw. And so people who have never been in a suit don't understand that equipped lifting is kind of a different sport, at least how you go about it. I mean, you have to learn how to use your suit. There are people who are super strong who might not be strong in a suit, but almost always in single ply, obviously multi-ply, this doesn't account for, but almost always in single ply, if you're strong in a suit, you're going to be strong out of a suit. And my kids are super strong, even out of suits. I mean, they could qualify for nationals raw if they wanted to. So we do a 6 months total raw, high volume, and then we go into suits. And then our program when we're in suits is kind of a modified concurrent conjugate where we have max effort. So for example, I'll just give an example of say a typical lady week, and then they're flipped for the guys until we have enough suits. But Monday is going to be max effort squats before the actual season starts. That'll be 3 to 5 reps, and then we'll do back down sets and then accessories that are kind of customized to their weakness. Tuesday would be volume bench for the ladies. Wednesday would be max effort deadlift for the ladies. Thursday would be max effort bench. And then Friday is volume lower body. And those days are flipped except for Fridays for the guys. So guys would be deadlift Monday, max effort on Tuesday, squats on Wednesday, volume bench on Thursday, and then everybody does lower body volume. And that's just so we can have enough suits. We're pretty fortunate because of our meets that we have a lot of suits, but even still, suits are really expensive. So we don't have enough for everybody to have squat and deadlift suits. So we kind of alternate those days so everybody has equipment to practice in.
You mentioned a really good point there as far as the suits and like getting them used to it. I think that's interesting that you get them. I mean, like you said, they are so different. If you ever put a pair of briefs on, yeah. I mean, it's insane, especially if they're a brand new pair or something like that. You know, I've had other people on this podcast that are equipped lifters. Shout out Bruce Mason. And he talked about that. Like, it's fitting into your gear, understanding how your gear works and getting the most out of the gear. Cause that's like right. At the end of game, you want to get a high total, right? So you got to get the most out of that gear. So I really am interested by that 6 weeks there. What about the raw kids though? Are you, having them use the knee wraps and everything pretty close to meets and stuff like that, or?
So there's no Raw in Texas. Everybody competes equipped. Everything is single ply, 2.5 meter knee wraps, 36 inch wrist wraps, normal belts, kind of typical, say like USPA standards, 2.5 meter knee wraps. Single ply, most of us are going to have, some people have Einser. We all have Titan. They're close. They're always good customer service. So we use that. And then when we start in the fall in our suits, we're two sizes bigger. And that's how so for example, even like freshmen, once they show stability in a movement or movement proficiency, they're going in suits to learn it. And I'll start them with loose suits that are almost going to be like a singlet, but that they can kind of start feeling how it's going to pinch them and give them abrasions and tear them up. And then, so for say like a varsity lady, she'll be two sizes too big when the season starts. So for 3 months, there are two sizes. Once the season starts, we go into one size too big. And then around mid-February, usually where we have a giant home meet, they'll go into actual competition tight suits. And if you see our kids, every one of them have to wear slip-ons. We have tremendously tight suits that take three people to get them off. And the only way you're able to do that is by practicing. And with this sport, you know, powerlifting, the goal is not to be the strongest. The goal is to be who can lift the most weight. And since we're single ply, I want to use every advantage we have, which is super tight suits, learning how to use it, getting the most out of the suit. And so that's kind of my mentality. And I've told coaches that, hey, we're in suits literally 3 days a week for months. And it just blows their mind. And I'm like, well, how is your kid learning that? They're either A, not in a tight enough suit, or B, when they get on the platform, their form's going to be all off. They're not going to be confident. And that, like, I don't know if we'll get to it, but that's literally my biggest thing as a coach, is that we work on like confidence and mindset. And so I want them to have that confidence going in, that they know how to use their suit. They know how to get in position. You know, if you see our videos, which you've mentioned, our form is probably, and I don't mean this disrespectfully to anybody else, is probably the top in anybody we compete against. And part of that, again, is just getting used to their suits.
Let's go ahead and dive in that. I mean, you know, I've competed, still compete a little bit in powerlifting. You have before. Mindset's a massive thing. If you do not have confidence going onto the platform, and that ties into like getting into the suits a little bit early. If you're not like confident in the way that your suit feels, like, you're not going to perform to your best.
Yeah, mindset's huge. I appreciate all the accolades that I've been getting lately. I definitely am far from a perfect coach. I've kind of lost it three times, one each year. And the last 2 years, this year and last year, the times I've lost it are when that mindset is not going in the direction that I expect. And that's actually why we do kind of conjugate also the max effort. I want the kids confident in what they can know. You know, we have people who will compete against a state who will have a 50 pound PR in squats, say a state. And I'm like, well, that's excellent. How do you know it wasn't 70 pounds? Or they missed. And how do you know it wasn't supposed to be 30 pounds? And so I want my kids going in confident at state. We don't do anything crazy whatsoever. There's nobody at state who's lifting even 5 pounds or 5 pounds at the most more than they've done during the season. I want them going in and with 100% confidence. You know, we did RPR, most people are familiar with it. There's if you go to RPR 2 level 2, they do some kind of mirror neuron stuff where you do an arm test and you're talking to somebody. So my arm is out. Mm-hmm. Somebody is talking positive to me or to you, and they go and they test my arm, and we're all the way across the room, right? So they're talking to you, whispering in your ear positive things. They test my arm, it's super strong. I'm looking at you, we're looking at each other in the eyes. They go back over and they talk a whole bunch of negativity to you, and they come back and they test my arm, and it just drops, and it's 100%. Kids don't need to know it. And it immediately shows the power of positivity. And I even took it a step further this year, and I got out our VMAX Pro, and with one of my seniors, we put 185 on the bar so she could manage it. And I said, move this as fast as you can. And we did power output reading plus velocity. I told everybody to talk a whole bunch of crap to her, scream out loud, you suck, you're horrible. And her power output was like 20% down on her watts. And her velocity dropped almost 0.2 on a squat. And then we did the opposite right away. And this is all in the course of like maybe a minute and 20 seconds. Then we said, cheered her, you're awesome. Everybody's cheering. And her power output was through the roof and her velocity increased. And that was her third one, just to make a point of, hey, this is why we don't talk negative. This is why you got to be in the right mindset. I don't want to hear any complaining. I don't want to hear any negativity. I don't want to set yourself up. And that's kind of been where I lost it this year, is were getting right before regionals, and the kids were starting to do that. Oh, my back hurts, or I don't feel good. I kind of feel like I'm getting sick. And, you know, that culture of you're a try hard. I was like, get that out of here, guys. Like, we are not going to start making excuses now if we don't perform like we want. And that was one of the biggest things when I gave my, you know, pre-state speech was, you are ready. Like, there's nobody here who's better than you. You've competed against the best in practice every single day. Like, just go do your thing, you know, use the energy, stay positive, because that's, you know, powerlifting, you're putting weight that could break people's back, and yeah. You got to be in the right mindset. You got to be confident. Cause if you're not, the second it gets hard, you're going to quit. So mindset is probably, honestly, mindset, culture, and relationships are the three biggest things that I push for our program here. It's a thing that is, thought of and done daily on purpose. It's just, it's too important not to. And that's the same for all sports.
Right. No, I mean, that's super important, especially, you know, it's for all sports, like you said, but for also for powerlifting too, because you talked about it there a little bit ago, like you want them to be able to do a weight that they're going to be able to do on the platform and stuff like that. And if you've already done it in the gym, like doing it on the platform, you've got all those things checked off the list, like you just said, boom, you're going to nail that thing. You know, I recently was reading, Wendler's powerlifting book again, 531. And I was just was rereading it over, and he talked about like your opener should be so easy. You just absolutely smoke it. Cause boom, you get that opener done. It's easy, especially from the squats. Like, hey, you're starting the meet off with a good base. And it might be something that you did in the gym for like 5 reps, but hey, you did that. And then you just progress over from there. But, now you also talked about the relationship side of things, especially in like you as a coach. Like, I'm assuming you're probably helping pick their attempts and everything like that. You've got to have a built relationship for something like that.
Right. Yeah. So, we kind of talked about this off air, but some of the stuff that you see at meets is just crazy. So for example, my lifters have no say in what they do. The only thing that they know about is what their openers are going to be. And okay. You had kind of just mentioned it. So previous to our first meet, you do a 3 rep max, and that's your opener. And then we start tweaking stuff as the season goes. We don't test openers ever again, but I want you to show me what you can do for 3 reps. That's their opener. From there, like once the season starts, just how I do my progressions, which is different for equipped than it is when I train raw lifters, like through my company or whatever, but I'll do 88% for their opener, 95% for their second, and then 100 to 100 plus 5 pounds, maybe, but that's super rare that I'll do even 100 plus 10 pounds. And that's kind of how we progress through our season. So if they hit that new PR of 5 or 10 pounds, then their opener and their second bump up, you know, probably 5 pounds, 10 pounds. And that's what I just keep doing. But at state, at regionals, at meets, at anything, they have absolutely no say in what they're going to do. They like, you know, at state, we'll have you watch a kid who opens and you're like, holy crap, like that was a third attempt. And the coach is like, what do you want to do next? And the lifter's like, oh, let's add 50 pounds. I'm just like, why? Like, you are literally checked. That kid, we don't even have to worry about, because he's done. Not only did he just go 1 for 3 on his squats, but now his confidence is shot. And so I don't understand it. It'd be like telling football team, hey, go call whatever plays you want, guys. Or, oh man, that run sucked. What do you think we should do next? Like, no other sport does that. But for some reason, you know, powerlifting at high school level, it's a lot of kids are given the opportunity to pick their attempts, and I don't want it, but they know 100% that I'm not going to give them any number that I do not 100% believe that they can hit. Again, it all comes down to confidence.
Yeah. And I can see the autonomy behind the coaches, but like, on that side of it, on their side, but in my opinion, and I know you agree with this, it's like, you're the coach, you're there to win, right?
Right.
And take the reins and you might be wrong, but at least like you make the decision for the athlete and put them in the right decision. I love that analogy you just said, like, it'd be like if the football team just decided to run their own play. It's like, you know, if you're a state champion football team, you're coached really, really well, right? And the players are bought into what the coach is saying, and they're going to run with that. I think that's personally, in my opinion, I think that might be one of the biggest things is that relationship side, because they got to be able to trust you to know that you're going to put them in the best position forward. And you've already talked about it already. It's like, you kind of prepare them in the gym for meet day. It's already, this is the easy part.
Sure. And so I agree 100%. We relationship, I'm going to be putting on a little clinic here free just from area coaches. And my very first slide literally says relationships are more important than culture which is more important than programming. Because if you don't have a relationship, then your coach-athlete relationship is key. Without that, you don't have a culture. Without a culture, you're not going to win. I mean, it's plain as day. The research is there. Coach-athlete relationship is literally key to everything. And so our culture, we have a culture of absolute competition that is rigorous but not ruthless. And that's a key distinction to make, that you have rigorous culture or rigorous competition that's not ruthless. There should be no hard feelings. But for example, like we set up our racks. So for example, one rack is my 97 state champ, my 105 state champ, and my 123 state champ sharing a rack. They're one of the only ones that are tripled up. Another one is my 220 state champ with my 198 state champ. My 114 who got second is with my 123 who got sixth. My 114 who got third is with my 132 who got second. 181 state champ is with the sixth place, or sorry, the third place 165. And I will ping pong them against each other. You know, my 114s, they're both goes on her swan. She gets 300 and I'll walk over to just got 300 and I'll just walk away. I'm not being like, oh, you got to beat her or you suck or what. I just want them to be like, okay, I want to beat her and I want that competition. And that's healthy competition. That's not ruthless competition. I'm not pinging them against each other. But when I have, you know, when I told them there is literally no team in the state that you have to worry about before state meet, that was honest. Like, we are literally competing against the best every single day. And there's nobody we're going to face that you have to be worried about. Like, they should be worried about us. We just go in and do our thing. And all of that is the culture of competition, rigorous competition, not ruthless.
Well, if you hear those stories from Westside, it sounds like the exact same thing, you know?
Right. It's, although they might be on the verge of ruthless.
Yeah, they might be a little bit on the other side a little bit there. from the stories you've, you know, and you watch the documentary and stuff like right. that. But it's crazy, man. So you talked about it a little bit ago, man. I'm interested to hear about it. So you're, and this is funny. So I have followed you for a really long time. And I always saw this, and I thought this is interesting, and hopefully the listeners follow me on this one. I saw little letters always get added onto your bio on Twitter. And I loved that, man, because it, for me personally, I was like, ah, this guy's, he keeps learning. Like, I got to keep learning. And I thought that was super important. So you talked a little bit, you're going to get your PhD. Can you talk a little bit about that and the importance behind that and the goals and everything?
Yeah. So I was a college scholarship athlete for track and cross country, and then kind of got out of it a little bit, just burnt out from, you know, years of doing that, and got a little out of shape, and then got back into fitness. And I knew I wanted to eventually be a strength coach. And so I started acquiring certifications. The last one was my CSCS. I purposely left that last so that I would feel like I was, you know, equipped. And honestly, my NASM physical or personal trainer cert was harder to get than my CSCS. Got my master's degree, and then I've been accepted to both University of Texas and Texas A&M for my PhD. So really shocked that I was able to convince both of them that I'm good enough to go there, but I obviously did. So next year, I unfortunately, which is literally the hardest decision I've ever made in my life, of leaving these kids, but I just try to think of it, how to say it, PR. I don't feel like I'll be able to grow in the direction I want in my current situation. So I needed to take a step back and change and kind of change my life's trajectory. And so I'll be getting my PhD most likely at University of Texas next year. So in kinesiology.
Man, that's super exciting. That's super
exciting. And hopefully they'll let me help them. I've already talked to the powerlifters there and their reps, and I'm like, let me help you guys. I'm more than willing to help. I'll be classified as a student. Looking at getting my USAPL coaching certification, because it's online, so that I'd be able to coach them. And I don't want to get away from powerlifting. I'm trying to take two of my seniors, my 132 and 220, with me to UT, so I can keep helping them. So we'll see.
How important is it for you being a coach and being able to see those athletes perform, like on meet day, and to see the joy and everything like that? Because, like, me personally, from again afar, I was cheering you guys on. I'm like, this is so awesome to see. Like, how important is it, you just being a coach and just seeing the change in these athletes from, like you said, you're getting some of those kids from freshman all the way through senior year, you're getting that 4 years with them.
Yeah. I had pretty good personal athletic success, and there is absolutely no comparison to seeing them accomplish goals that they never thought, like, I'm almost choking up right now, seeing them reach their goals that they never thought possible. I mean, it's way better by far than anything I've ever accomplished personally. It's phenomenal. It's that's why it's so hard to walk away. and I hope they know I love them. And that's literally been the hardest decision I've ever made. I'm trying to find a coach who I can still be an influence, at least program, and then go to meet day. So I'm trying to get a coach in to take over for who I can help groom and teach till school's out, because they're just awesome kids. They deserve it.
So one thing I'm interested too as well, you know, you've lifted before yourself in the past. We talked about that before on the podcast. How important do you think it is? And when I say this, I don't mean to be rude, but like as a coach that you train yourself, like and the athletes understand that. Can you talk a little bit about the importance, especially probably within powerlifting? Like, hey, you kind of know what's going, like kind of what they're experiencing on meet day and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's key. I think it's key for, and you know, it's kind of a, and I completely understand why, due to numbers and athletic periods and stuff, but that's kind of an unfortunate thing in high school athletics is there's a lot of sport coaches, and this is no fault to their, and I'm not blaming them one bit, but that are getting put in positions that they might not have experience in. You know, I would never feel comfortable going and being a football coach. I never played football. I played when I was in middle school. I don't classify that as playing it. I wouldn't feel comfortably going and being a baseball coach. And in Texas powerlifting, part of why it's so big, we were talking earlier, there's probably, there were right under 5,400 ladies. And so there's probably close to 7,000 guys. So we're talking about 12,000 athletes, powerlifters in Texas. And a big part of how that came to be was football coaches being able to kind of keep their kids in check during the off season to get around the UIL rules, our governing bodies rules. And so a lot of them might not have powerlifting experience. They are going to do kind of what they did when they were younger. And so having that personal knowledge of, you know, meet day jitters, programming, attempts, is key. How to peak the kids, nutrition, you know, when to pull back, when to push harder, is invaluable because of the personal experience I had doing that. You know, the coach's eye has come from watching myself on video, like, holy cow, that felt so heavy. And then I watch it on video and it moved like a second attempt, you know, being able to tell the kids, hey, I promise you that moves super smooth. It might've felt heavy. Stay out of your head. Go do it. Just pick it up. Go. Like, you can do it. Let's go. And having that experience of knowing what they're going through is key. Absolutely. I actually had Josh Bryant, who, you know, almost anybody on your podcast is probably going to hear. I had him coach me for almost 6 months. I had another lifter who I won't mention, but all-time world record holder, coach me, also for, like 4 months. And that was invaluable. Also, it helped me both learn what I want to do and what I don't want to do. And I did an internship at Texas State, and that was another great thing. You know, being around Division I athletes, Division I coaches, I both learned a lot of what I want to do, and also at the same time, things that I wanted to not do as a coach. So, having that personal experience and being around great people, having great coaches myself, is absolutely invaluable.
Yeah, it's important to have a good system around you, man. If you have that good system around you, the athletes are going to benefit big time from that. In my opinion, I think that's probably the biggest thing, is having a good support system around you. And that comes from, like you said, the years of yourself doing the work, and then, you know, yourself putting yourself out there, going and getting good internships. That's why I say to like coaches, like, you might go intern somewhere and you might not like the person you work for, but you're going to learn either something you really like. More likely you'll learn something you like. You're also going to learn stuff that you don't want to do at your next stop. So right. I think a lot of times coaches get disgruntled, especially in the early in their career, of like, I didn't get anything out of that internship. It's like, you got a lot more than you think if you really look down in the nuts and bolts of things. And you made a really key point there, man, is that you can always find the good and stuff, and you can always find like where maybe there's, you know, better opportunity, as people say. So
yeah. And also one thing, kind of back to the quest for knowledge. Well, being a powerlifting myself, obviously, is going to give me, I don't know, a leg up or whatever, and just the passion. You know, that is my passion. That's what I did before I came here. And so when I had the opportunity to coach them, yeah, you know, it was phenomenal because it was a sport that I was vested in. But just that drive for knowledge, I've used that for the powerlifters too. You know, I've probably spent, no joke, 40 hours over the last 3 years just analyzing our program, analyzing what the kids have said. Like, and that comes from a coach-athlete relationship, which again is the key. being able to talk to them and I 100% believe them, like, hey, this, we didn't feel good from doing this, or hey, I think that this is working, and having that and analyzing our program and going back and forth and changing stuff and dropping stuff out, like keeping stuff in for 6 weeks. Hey, how do you feel? Oh, I don't feel any different. Okay, well, that's a, you know, that was time consuming or fatiguing. Let's pull that out. Never stopping learning and acquiring data, however possible, and making them be in a position to be the best that's possible. And I saw a tweet the other day that really got to my core, you know, something along the lines of, you know, as coaches, we tell our kids they need to eat right. They need to be here during the summer. They need to do all this extra stuff. And we talk down to them if they don't. And then we do the same programming that we've done for 6 years. And we call the same plays on the football field that we haven't been successful for 15 years. And we do have the same practice format that we've done for 15 years. And we don't grow as a coach, but then we expect these kids to grow. And that's something that's really resonated with me. And I'm like, you know what? Like, that's right. The kids deserve better. They deserve to have somebody who wants to be better and better than. That tweet just really like shook me to my core. Cause I'm like, how many of us do that? We just, oh, this is the way we've always done it. Or, you know, you have a little bit of success. You know, one of my favorite quotes is, nothing has ever hindered greatness more than the desire to be good. And I just want to say that again, nothing has hindered greatness than the desire to be good. And that's 100% true, right? You get complacent. Oh, we were successful. I'm good. Like we won district.
Yep.
We made the playoffs. That's good. And that's where they stop, because they've got good, they've got above average, and they're okay with that. And so, you know, that you see our Twitter, I have that, we will win state hashtag that I literally started in my first year here 3 years ago, when we had no shot to anybody's, nobody would have thought we would have had the opportunity to win state that year. The year before I started, there were, I think, four people who went to state and they scored 2 points. And that first year we had we set the regional record. We have had seven people who won regionals. We took 11 to state, and we should have got third if it wasn't for a mishap where we dropped the bar when we didn't get the state record, and we went from third to fourth. But we went from no state to should have placed, and that we will win state. You know, I've been talked down to, oh, you're cocky, you're whatever, you're narcissistic, you whatever, both internally in our school and outside. Other people have said that, oh, he's cocky. It has absolutely nothing to do that with that. It's absolutely, I want them to be in a mindset of success. I want that to be like our goal. Like, if you don't have cultural alignment, you're not going anywhere. And so that's exactly. One of the key things is, we are not looking to be good. We are looking to be great. And from day one, that was a mindset that I had. We will win state. We will have fun doing it. We will build awesome relationships. We will have the best time ever. But our end goal is to be great, not good.
Coach Revy, you got me wanting to go down there and hit some max effort squats now. What the heck, man?
Anytime, let's go.
No, but seriously, like, that is a huge thing. And that goes into, like, that's going to bleed into their regular life too, as well as, like, if you just are complacent in life, you might achieve things. You might have a good life, but like, you're always going to have that 1% that you left behind, right?
Yep.
You let up off the gas pedal when you should have mashed it down on the floor and kept it going, kind of thing. And that's right. Where it's valuable as a coach to like be able to get those lessons in. And I love that you had that hashtag, man. Like, that's no different than any other school having a hashtag that says like all in or,
right,
you know, whatever it is. To me, that is where the shift happens as a coach, to where you can absolutely change lives for the better, because those kids are for now forever going to, like, I remember my state championship as a sophomore. To this day, I can remember that whole run. Right. Those kids are going to remember that for a lifetime. Remember that dedication, everything that went into that whole entire season, man.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And there's a, that's one of the things I love best about this sport is the life lessons that they learn from. And I mean, you're literally constantly being pushed down and you have to stand back up over and over again. And this year was, we had a really bad, and this is probably one of my most proud moments of being a coach ever. We had a really bad snowstorm here where everything got shut down for a week. And we were supposed to go to a meet, which was going to be essentially like the girls' last chance qualifier. And we missed it. And then we were supposed to have a home meet and it got canceled. And so we were out, no practice for 7 days. And we were able to actually create a small meet with just a couple schools. And so the lifters hadn't lifted in like 9 days. They were just doing pushups and jump squats and bodyweight squats on their own. And they came in after that. A lot of them didn't have power. They were staying with cousins. We were literally out of food because the grocery stores were all shut down. Like, well, during that time, I literally lived off of gas station food. And they came in, and 10 of my ladies set PRs, and only two didn't. And those two did not have a bad meet. And my key takeaway was that was, do life is going to push you down all the time. You're going to have doubts. Like, they were worried that they were going to get hurt. They were going to worry they were going to be bad. And I told them, like, you guys literally just showed you can always do more than you think you can. You literally were just in a horrible situation, and you came out and you were rock stars. Like, remember that for the rest of your life. And that was probably one of my most proud coaching moments I've ever had. They shined through tremendous adversity. I mean, literally broken pipes, no food, no working out, and came in and 10 of the 12 PR'd.
That's unbelievable, man. I love hearing stories like that because that's life changing. I mean,
Yeah.
that truly is life changing. You always go back to those moments. Like, I still think back on, I still compete, and you don't always have it every day, right? You know this. You're not going to have it every single day, but if you show up, you're consistent with things, good things are going to happen. But as we
Right.
wind down here, gonna have our last question for you here is, what is one thing that you're grateful for?
I'm definitely grateful for both my family. I mean, like, trying to not get choked up. Like, this sport is the longest continuous sport in Texas. Meets are 12 weeks. So every single meet for 12 weeks. And then when we get down to, and they're all day, right? We leave at 5 a.m. We get home at 6 p.m. And then the ending meets are all overnight trips. So I don't, literally don't see my kids on the weekend for all of March, essentially. And so, like, my wife being a rock star and helping out, and with the state champion coach, men or women's trophy, I gave it to my son for being the best big brother. And
Let's
then just the
go.
lift, yeah, just the lifters, man. They really are a special group. I'm gonna miss them a lot.
Oh man, that's awesome to hear. And yeah, we talked before the podcast. I want to have you on, but I remember you put up like what's your guys' schedule. I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna reach out to him anytime soon. He's too busy winning a state championship.
Yeah, this year was hard with the COVID restrictions, and so meets were restricted to seven teams plus yourself. And so we had seven home meets this year just to make sure everybody got opportunities to compete. So it was a crazy year, but it all worked out. Their hard work paid off.
Absolutely, man. Well, hey, I'm so thankful to have you on this week for the podcast. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to reach out to you on social media, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, my Twitter is Coach Redman. That's Coach, and then REB as in boy, MANN. That's the one I'm most active on. I don't really check Instagram that often. And then Facebook, I only have for personal friends and family. So Twitter is the best. You have my email address. I don't mind sharing that also. I don't claim to know it all, but I'm 100% willing to help anybody. Again, putting on a, if you're in the Central Texas area or you want to get on Zoom, go to Lobo Powerlift I1. If you wouldn't mind putting that in the show notes, I'm
Yeah.
going to do a completely free, just going over how I've created our culture and our programming. I'm going to lay every single thing out that we've done. I hope you take it all or fit it to your needs. I want the sport to grow. When we all get better, everybody gets better. And with college coaches, you know, now having, you know, we talked about Coach Blanco, awesome guy. Now that schools are getting scholarships, I want the sport to grow as people realize that they can make money schools, because I mean, let's be honest, colleges are business. As they realize they can
Yeah.
create a powerlifting program, give them scholarships. You know, kids are getting half the price of school, getting an education, and kids going to college. I'm all for helping anybody I can.
How freaking cool is that, man? Like, I wish there was something like that when I was going to school, man. I
Yeah,
totally
me
would have
too.
taken that. I totally would have taken that.
Although I was like 135 pounds when I graduated, so I don't know how fit I would have
Woo!
been.
Dang, man. What, Coach? Again, I can't thank you enough for being on the podcast. Everybody, make sure you reach out to him. Thank you, Coach, for being on.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, make sure you reach out to Coach and stay strong.